This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann and I'm joined by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. We're coming up for air.
Oh, we are coming up for air and blowing bubbles. And today on Coming Up for Air, as part of Blowing Bubbles, we have got Saima Faisal. Saima, it is wonderful to have you here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity, Mawira and Sam. So my name is Saima Faisal and I'm currently doing my Master's in Sustainable Business from Otago with wonderful people around, especially like Mawira. Like, she's my mentor at the moment, especially with the Indigenous community. So yeah, learning a lot of those people.
Welcome, Saima. Where did you grow up, Saima?
I'm from Pakistan, basically.
What was that like?
It was good, quite different from New Zealand, but when you go to different cities, you adopt their culture and the values you bring along and just merge it up with your own. And yeah, that had got overall like good feeling, especially New Zealand. If I compare it with the natural side, I love nature a lot. And so that's why this is also one of my the push I need to do something on my rights and my contributions towards nature, how I'm going to give it back, like especially with the climate change and all that stuff. That is my major, and I'm going to write a thesis about it as well in future planning too. So yeah, overall good.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
I'm already grown up.
What did you want to be?
I wanted to be a psychologist and also like a good human being overall, I would say, like giving back, as I said, to what we have learned, earned from our adults and elders. So yeah, psychologist you can say, and now like also something in supply chain and like business side.
So what did you end up doing?
To be honest, like till graduation, I was on my right path. Like I did my graduation in psychology and economics. So both sides going together. And now as it like major was economics as well. So I am ending up towards business side as well. So yeah, hopefully it would be there in one way or the other.
Now that might make sense to you, but I'm afraid it doesn't make sense to me to mix psychology and economics. What recipe book were you reading to come up with that concoction?
For psychology, if I align it with the business side, it's about the mental, like mind games as well. So if a person, if you can convince, example, in the business side, a person, so if you can convince the other person about how their behavior impacts in longer run, like if I'm taking example, climate change or climate adaptation, that was my major for podcast. So if I know how the other person's behavior pattern is, I can guide him. And by judging him first and observing him would be the right word, I think so. And then redirecting him to the right space. So that's how these two can be aligned.
Is it sensible to base economics on a concept of us being rational?
On being rational... I think I can. Like if a person like in a rational, if a rational person, just not from economist side, you can see how they naturally are doing different things. And from economist perspective, you can just like remodel or tailor it, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah. For me, the premise of us being rational as a basis for economics struggles with the fact that I know I'm not.
Why?
Because because I'm much better at satisfying. I'm much better at, yes, there's probably a cheaper way of me doing something or a better way of me doing something, but actually I'm a bit lazy and this is the mortgage I've signed up for and so it's the one I'm stuck with. So it kind of like that assumption that we're all this sort of machine doesn't work. And the reason for that, I wonder if there's a message for how we deal with climate change sustainability in that interaction of a psychological understanding of the world and an economic understanding of the world.
Psychological, it's very easy. I think I can explain it. Like if in a layman experience, like if you see what was in the past and what's in the future and what's coming up because of your own behaviors, you can easily like figure out like these are the consequences. But economic perspective, it is again like demand and supply example I'm going to tell you in here. So it's about striking the balance. That is equilibrium word that we use in economics. So like if the demand is for certain things, like if I go back to the future, it was like all need have vehicles, petrol or something to come up to the destination in fraction of time. And in nowadays, if we look back, that is growing up, ending up in CO2 emissions. And in future, if I talk about the climate change and how it is impacting, I can relate it like this is what we have done. Like it was so much in demand and the production, the supply was also in present there. But at the end, there was no balance in that. So in psychological space, if we teach people like where we can make little changes, we can utilize the technology, but also using our brains and how we can cut short our emissions, number one. Number two, in pocket-wise economy side, we can cut down our expenses. So these few little things, we can explain to other people and they both can get along, if that makes sense to you.
We're quite good in our understanding of sustainability or understanding of business processes at creating systems that are quite well bounded and creating externalities that we just ignore.
Mm.
But we're also quite good at doing that in our personal lives. Yeah. There's this thing going on down there, but it's not my problem. Somebody else will deal with it. Again, if we bring those two together, does that give us any clue as to how we could overcome that?
As you said, like sometimes we consciously we won't be doing our part, but unconsciously in back of our mind, how we are trained, we would be that like a little contributor, you can say. So,
cool. So, what led you to enroll in a program about sustainability?
First of all, I have also done my project and research process. Like I'm family of five. And with New Zealand small houses, I was really struggling how to make space for my children's clothes, myself. And that was a big like a lightning bulb. Like we are just getting clothes just to be in fashion or to meet up the society. And if I see how it's ending up in the landfill, what I'm teaching to my kids. So that was like one of the points, like we have to do something that is long-term sustainable. Plus we are respecting our land rather than just dumping in, and even for food and all that stuff. And the climate crisis, like all the times since like I was in year six, in our social studies books, our teacher taught us like rainforest, rain, climate adaptation, why heat is there, why floods are coming. So I always wondered like what are the consequences and why. So that was a big why. And as I told you, my star, my personality is more towards nature and all that stuff. So it was a bit something like I can, as a human being, contribute. And as a mom, I think it's my duty to give my children this information, like because they are the future generations. So it like, it was a really worrisome situation for me. Like, if as family of five, there's much mess we are making on our planet. So how about the, like, in a bigger picture? So wanted to play my part, and that was one of the motivation to be enrolled in sustainability. And then I learned, like, it's not only about clothes and all that stuff. We have to go back and see, like, all the scope 2, scope 3 emissions, and in long, like, life cycle of all the products. So that's good.
Has that love of nature always been there for you?
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
From my father. Because he used to take us to the beaches, to parks, to forests. He never let us sit in this house. So every time we went out, he just asked, like, can you hear the birds singing? Okay, can you see the trees, how, like, big they are, how much time, and what if we would have cut it, what impact? Because he was from a farmer's background, like his parents. And he used to tell us, like, we love our land, and there was a time when we couldn't, like, own it. We have to, like, give it to other people for money. But that was the only source of earning. So my parents did blah, blah things to get it back. And we should be, like, respecting it as our mother. So I was like, if for that piece of land, we are so much enthusiastic, like, we should keep it. So what about our planet Earth? And also, like, it gave me sense of peace whenever I go out, like, in fresh air. So emotional thing, you can say, or that makes me more calm and all this stuff.
Does that emotion carry through into the business world? I think we're taught about business world being somehow emotion free, that it's not actually about those sorts of passions. Are we creating a wall that's getting in the way?
If you can elaborate that question for me a little bit more.
The spaces that we live in, and we are emotional about, and we have attachment to place and attachment to people and all those sorts of things, are in fact the same spaces as the ones we operate businesses in.
No, but totally different.
But it's the same land, it's the same place.
But we
separate them in terms of how we think about them.
Yeah, that's, again, I think awareness plays the part in here. Like, if you're just making business in terms of money or whatever, and you're not thinking about the footprint you're leaving behind, I think it should be the awareness, like, you need to bring people in and teach them. So if you see in general concept, I agree with you, like, business space and these two are different situations. But as we're talking about sustainability, we have to teach people, like, how you can do business while impacting the sustainability side as well, like, not just in materialistic side.
Let's take your music track. Let's have Somewhere Only We Know, except that we're going to play it for everyone so that everyone will hear it as well. Then they'll know too. That is by Rianne. Why this one?
As I mentioned, this song started with the walking around on Earth and, like, going to the rivers and making it comfortable. So as I mentioned, like, every time I go, it makes, like, more serenity, more peaceful for my mind. So that's why I wanted this song to be in.
I walked across an empty land. I knew the pathway like the back of my hand. I felt the earth beneath my feet. Sat by the river and it made me complete. Oh, simple thing. I'm getting tired. everything, so why don't we go somewhere only we know? Somewhere only we know. Oh, simple thing.
Sprite of the forest of
Orokanui,
Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu
Mackenzie. Kia ora koutou, nga mihi arahanui, kia koutou, ko tahu ho. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, and wherever you are, and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, the triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now I know that for every single person on the planet, we have been through a great upheaval, and the world that we knew and loved and trusted and took for granted changed for every single one of us. And we now find ourselves in a changed world. And for many people, this has allowed them to realize that they are in control of their lives. And they may want to live differently now. And many people are making changes in their life that they feel reflect more truly who they are and where their values sit. For others, they have wanted to continue to maintain the lives already established. But of course, having to adjust and having to make alterations and changes in order to do this. And all of this work, in whatever direction it's in, and we have some beautiful stories, of course, from this amazing show about how people are doing this. All of this work, all of this transformation requires an equal amount of restoration and rejuvenation, recuperation, rest. Because transformation, transmutation, is a very powerful process, and it is a process that requires a lot of energy. And so I hope that for you, whatever transformations are taking place in your life, you're also having the opportunity to rest, to recuperate, to process the changes that you're making. And I really hope that you're giving yourself the opportunity to laugh, to smile, to love the process as it's happening, even though it's challenging. To think, here we are, the potiki on this earth, the children on this earth, this young, young species so newly evolved, surrounded by our ancient ancestors at every turn. And here we are with unique skills, unique gifts to care for the world, to make the world even better, to protect it, to nurture it. And here we are making these changes. And sometimes when we take a step back and we see the big picture like that, it can give us a sense of relief. It can remove some of the pressure that we might feel. I know for myself, with my work at Orokonui, the Eco Sanctuary has a 1,000-year plan, which of course extends far, far into the future. And it involves bringing back many species that have been lost to the valley. And I know, of course, I can just give as much as I can, and then it will outlive me. And that's a wonderful feeling. And that can be I think at times, a helpful way to conceptualise all our lives, takes the pressure off. So I really hope for you, you're having the opportunity to see those transformations that you're making and to feel very proud, to acknowledge your strength, to acknowledge your tenacity and determination, and to acknowledge the fact that you knew change needed to take place in your life. Of course, being part of this show is a huge pleasure and privilege, so a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me, and I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Saima Faisal.
Saima, we are going to listen to your podcast now.
Yep.
What would you like the listeners to know about it before they hear it?
My podcast, it was basically like the topic was about like very particular towards Auckland, but in back of my mind it was about the transformational adaptation and greener future for Auckland. So it was more about like how we are going to adapt, like everyone is talking about the climate change or transformation, like, but how as a layman, how are we going to adapt it, how are we going to make people make it like a new norm for them. So my podcast was with one of the chief scientists from Auckland Transport. So I just wanted to hear her insights, like what they are doing in their space and how, like in public sector, what their contributions are. So she told me about like how they have like not totally transformed it towards electric vehicles or fleets. They are trying to transition it at this stage, and also like what impact it has already shown and in future how it would be looking like to achieve their goals.
Perfect. Let's listen.
Hello and welcome to Coming Up for Air, Contemporary Issues in Sustainability. In today's episode, we will discuss climate change and transformational adaptation with Katie. Dr. Katie Bibbleman is Auckland Transport's Chief Scientist, Head of Science and Sustainability. She has extensive background and knowledge in the environmental impacts of infrastructure and transport network, with over 25 years of experience in the public sector. Climate change is here and we must adapt for our future health, quality of life and better ecosystem. How would you explain climate change and adaptation?
Causing a number of physical changes around the world, including potentially acidification of our oceans. It's looking at heat stress, it's bigger storm events, more heavier rainfall and other things like that. So sea level rise, I guess, as the ice shelf melts, that kind of thing. So climate change is being caused by carbon emissions, and so there's been a push in many areas to look at how we reduce our emissions. But the other side of that coin is really looking at knowing that climate change is progressing, how do we actually adapt to the changing climate that we're experiencing? And from an Auckland Transport perspective, so that we're working in both sides of that space. One of them is looking at how we decarbonise our fleet and work in a more low carbon environment. And the other side is what can we do to our physical assets like the PT network or public transport network and the road network to ensure that it's still functional as far as possible with those changing climate events.
What is transformational adaptation and why it matters?
A detailed evaluation of, well, what are the climate hazards that our network is going to face and what is the risk to those assets on our network from those climate hazards. So we've done a detailed assessment and we've come up with quite a substantial number of risks to our network, 140-odd to be accurate. We've looked at the top 10 and they really involve things like increased number of landslides, rainfall events and flooding, coastal erosion, things like sea level rises a bit further into the future, but we've got immediate concerns now around heat stress and how that impacts our network, for example. Things like that. Flooding is quite a substantial issue. And we saw that earlier last year, particularly in Auckland, where that impacted our network with something in the order of 1,600 landslides within a two-week period. So that's really one of the big risks we need to understand better. And then once we've understood our risks, we need to look at what actions we can take when we manage our assets. What improvements can we make so that those assets will be more resilient when those storm events do come at us? And it's a matter of working with communities, working with Auckland Council, understanding from a rainfall perspective, how do we manage runoff from those storm events? Where does that drainage network sit? How sized is it? Do we need green infrastructure in more grassed areas, for example, to soak up some of that rainfall so that it's not all going down into properties, flooding road networks, etc. And then we need to understand, as we build new assets and repair and renew our existing network, what changes do we need to make that network more resilient? And it might be where we have a coastal road, for example. We know that we're getting coastal erosion from wave action in that area, and we might want to increase the strength or resilience of the seawall, so that the road's not getting washed away. Or we may want to raise the level of the road so that it's not inundated with seawater as frequently. Things like that. So there's various steps and options we can take. Ultimately, in some areas, we need to look at whether it's feasible to even keep that road in that place, and can we realign it to an area or location that's sort of outside that substantive area of flooding, but still be providing access. And I guess ultimately there will have to be decisions made around in the future, can we even keep that bit of land, or is that land actually going to erode away? And that's where we end up with realignment and retreat options. But for most of the region, that's quite some time into the future at this point.
All right. And like, how ecosystems are transforming due to this climate change?
Yeah, the heat in the environment is causing a number of changes. So over summer, of course, we've had some droughts. So, of course, with less rainfall, that's impacting on soil moisture, which then in turn impacts on the ability to grow vegetation, particularly in the road corridor, but that impacts a much wider community interest as well in terms of market gardens, vegetable growing, and parks and reserves, spaces like that. So heat stress is significant. The impact of flooding, of course, is substantial in that it impacts the ecosystem by washing, in particular, a lot more soil particles into our harbours and streams. And so you often see very cloudy water after rainfall events because it's mobilised a lot more soil and sediment. That can settle over time and smother ecosystems and biota that live within those water-based areas and environments. Other things we're looking at in our network is the impact of streetlights, for example, and where we've swapped out, in the name of being energy efficient, we've swapped out a lot of those old sodium lamps, which were quite yellow, to the very white, cool light of an LED. And while that saved us quite a lot in terms of electricity use and the emissions associated with that, the cool white light mimics sunlight. So there are now studies coming out showing the impact of that cool light on the breeding cycles, for example, of native insects. Migration and impacts on bird flight. So often we need to be really mindful of some of the unintended consequences of rushing out to make our network resilient or low carbon when that's got a downstream environmental impact. And so we're starting to look into that space in a lot more detail to understand how running a transport network actually impacts on our environment.
Right. What is the most important sector to decarbonize? It represents almost half of CO2 emission in New Zealand after agriculture. What's being done in this context?
Sure. We've done quite a lot of work in the decarbonisation space. So there's a few areas that we focus on. Scope one, looking at our operational emissions. So that's looking at the emissions associated with our corporate business, how we move around as staff, etc., resources we use to run our business. And we've made some changes in that space. In particular, we've made substantial changes with scope two emissions, which are associated with energy and electricity use. Mm-hmm. So again, as I mentioned, swapping out the lights to LED on our streetlight networks made a huge reduction in our scope two emissions. Our scope three emissions are looking at the value chain, and we're looking at the materials we use to construct and maintain the road network, the energy or fuel that we use, say, in a, maybe it's a diesel generator that's used on site, or some of the plant and equipment that's used in road construction, for example, and the emissions associated with that. We're doing a lot of work to look at the emissions attached, say, with all the concrete that we might use in our footpaths, or what are some of the alternatives that we could employ to, say, fossil fuel-based binders that we might use in bitumen when we build our roads, surfacing. And so we do a lot of work with universities, with industry and other suppliers to test and trial these lower carbon or new materials on our network with a view to reducing our emissions. So AET has measured, set targets in these spaces. We've done a lot of the measuring. We're well on the way to achieving reductions across all of those scope three. And to add to that, we've changed all of the train network in Auckland to electrified electric train units. Yeah. So they're all electrified. Our bus network is now, our bus fleet that we use has got a low emissions roadmap, looking with a view over the next 10 years or so to electrify the bus fleet and retire the diesel buses. And we're looking at how we can work with ferries now and the ferry network to use electric ferries to swap out those diesel engines for electric ones. So a lot of the public transport network we have is already looking at low carbon and electrification. But there's a whole lot more we can do in that space in terms of the way people move around our cities and our region needs to include different aspects like walking and cycling, micro-mobility. We've got a lot of electric scooters that you see from various mobility providers, little mopeds. How can we utilise the full range of different transport modes to actually reduce the transport-related emissions? And it's not just about electrifying everybody's car. It's about making the right transport choice for the journey that you need to make.
Right. Have you faced any challenges?
It's a perpetual challenge. I guess one of the biggest challenges we face is having certainty of funding so that we can then continue to improve our public transport network, that we can roll out more buses so that people have a viable alternative if they want to leave their car at home. How can we build in more pedestrian and cycling facilities so that it's a safe alternative for people? For example, when I went to school, no one thought of driving their children to school. We all walked and cycled. Today that seems to have flipped on its head to a large part, and so many more parents are driving their children to school because they perceive that road to be less safe than when they were children. And so it's about helping people make those choices and making sure that the road network that people use is as safe as it possibly can be for them. So funding to make those changes is one of our challenges. But just helping people understand that sometimes it means a change in behaviour. Sometimes it's helping people have new knowledge, helping people understand the impact of their choices. Sometimes the language around that sometimes is not really clear. So there's a whole lot of challenges in that space.
Yeah. And you mentioned about the suppliers, so about like stakeholder engagement, internal and external, and how do you manage your assets and all these people especially considering the transformational side of this one, like climate adaptation?
Yeah, so there's a lot of work we're doing in-house at the moment around transition planning. And so it's about how do we transition Auckland from the way we move around today to where we need to be in 10 or 15 years' time to reflect that climate resilience that we need to be delivering on our network, but also to decarbonise the way we should move around in Auckland. So there's a few things in that transition planning that we need to get our head around. And I guess for a lot of people, that the way of thinking about that's quite new. And I think if I was to get one message across is that we've all done transitions before. When I was a child, we had one telephone in the house and it had a cord and a dial and we all had to share it. And we couldn't take it into our bedrooms to have a private phone call. But we've all transitioned to having our own phone and we can barely put it down. We've done other transitions as a community or society when I first started working, and it makes me sound old, but there was a typing pool in the office and all the managers would give their letters or communications which needed typing to the ladies, because they were always ladies, in the typing pool, and then you would get them back. Well, with the advent of personal computers, all those managers have had to learn how to double click, and a lot of us, we do our own typing now. We don't go to a typing pool. So again, that's another transition that we've done as a society, and it's happened. So I'm really confident that we can transition again. It's just a matter of understanding that it's going to happen.
And also, like, coming across your views, like, I'm finger crossed, like Auckland will be going towards lower carbon and greener future soon. So some thoughts on how we could reimagine our transport infrastructure?
We're doing that already. So with our walking and cycling work, with our public transport work in Auckland, we've got trains, buses, ferries. We've got other tools that central government is looking at that might be congestion charging or different road pricing structures that will help encourage people to shift or alter the way they travel. So there's a whole lot of things in that space. And it's not just one that's going to save us, for example. Electrifying our car fleet, for example, might reduce the dependency on fossil fuels, but it's not going to reduce congestion. And it's not going to reduce the impact on our environment in terms of the wear and tear of brake pads or the wear and tear of car tyres and the generation of microplastics. So while we fix one problem, if you like, we haven't really addressed that bigger picture. And so while there's a lot of things we can do, it's a little bit of everything that we really need.
Right. And like in terms of like sustainability on your organization, where do you see it heading towards the next 3 to 5 years?
I think it's a really exciting space because within Auckland Transport now, we are looking very strongly at how we manage our carbon. And from that perspective, we're building carbon budgeting tools so that we can help our project managers, our project designers, for example, to start making and testing their designs and in some of these tools to come up with the most low carbon design that we can put out on the network. We're looking at using testing materials so that we can reduce that carbon. And so as we have targets for our different scope 1 to 3 emissions, working towards achieving those in a consolidated way, in an integrated way, is one of those challenges. But I think there is so much opportunity for us to do things better and more integrated and low carbon, environmentally friendly option. With the advent of personal computers, all those managers have had to learn how to double click. And a lot of us, we do our own typing now. We don't go to a typing pool. So again, that's another transition that we've done as a society. And it's happened. So I'm really confident that we can transition again. It's just a matter of understanding that it's going to happen.
Yeah. And also, like, coming across your views, like, I'm finger crossed, like, Auckland will be going towards lower carbon and greener future soon. So some thoughts on how we could reimagine our transport infrastructure?
We're doing that already. So with our walking and cycling work, with our public transport work in Auckland, we've got trains, buses, ferries. We've got other tools that central government is looking at that might be congestion charging or different road pricing structures that will help encourage people to shift or alter the way they travel. So there's a whole lot of things in that space, and it's not just one that's going to save us. For example, electrifying our car fleet, for example, might reduce the dependency on fossil fuels, but it's not going to reduce congestion, and it's not going to reduce the impact on our environment in terms of the wear and tear of brake pads or the wear and tear of car tyres and the generation of microplastics. So while we fix one problem, if you like, we haven't really addressed that bigger picture. Yeah. And so while there's a lot of things we can do, it's a little bit of everything that we really need.
Right. And like in terms of like sustainability on your organization, where do you see it heading towards the next 3 to 5 years?
I think it's a really exciting space because within Auckland Transport now, we are looking very strongly at how we manage our carbon. And from that perspective, we're building carbon budgeting tools so that we can help our project managers, our project designers, for example, to start making and testing their designs and in some of these tools to come up with the most low carbon design that we can put out on the network. We're looking at using testing materials so that we can reduce that carbon. And so as we have targets for our different scope 1 to 3 emissions, working towards achieving those in a consolidated way, in an integrated way, is one of those challenges. But I think there is so much opportunity for us to do things better and more integrated and low carbon, environmentally friendly option.
Right. And the last question, like, if you could change one thing, what could that be? Like, it could make a most significant difference in the future.
I thought about that question, and you know what? It made me think of the beauty pageant question that all the contestants always get asked, and the standard answer is world peace. And I think, and for a lot of people right now, world peace would be the one thing that they're wishing for if we acknowledge what's happening in our world at the moment. But there isn't one silver bullet. If we could redistribute wealth so that there was no poverty, it still wouldn't fix climate change. Mm-hmm. If we could stop our desire for perpetually owning the newest and the latest and encouraging people to live within our planetary boundaries, that still wouldn't stop climate change. If we could just do all of those things, it would be a big start. And for me, there isn't one silver bullet. It's actually a little bit of everything.
So is it wrong to say, like, everyone has to play their part to achieve this?
Not wrong. I think it's a very right thing to say. And there's often the argument that New Zealand is so little, we're not going to make a difference. But some of the commitments our country has made to the international targets that we've signed up to, for example, the Paris Agreement, require us to play our part. And when we don't, there are penalties through higher costs to import goods, for example, or tariffs imposed to export them to cover the cost of carbon that we're not producing at home here. So even though we look really little, every contribution counts, and we all have an opportunity to work towards that.
Thank you for listening. And with the message, Manaki Fanua, Manaki Tangata, Haere Whakamu, that is care for land, care for the people. and go forward, meaning if we care for our environment and communities, we will advance and grow.
That was so interesting, Saima. And what I found really interesting about it is every podcast that we've played from the Coming Up for Air series has required a level of social change, and it seems to be the challenge that everybody is facing.
Yeah.
But in your podcast, there was some actual real solutions. So how do you feel about that? Where do you feel you've landed in that?
I think we are going in the right direction, Mavera. And only the challenging part is, like, we need to bring more people on board, like-minded and understanding what is the requirement at this stage. And, like, just beating about the bush, like climate change and all that stuff, is not going to work. It's already happening. We can't stop it. It's the only issue, like, how as a person or as a group, we are going to play our part. And as I mentioned, like, it's just not one person. It can be a small child or anyone playing their part. Like, if I'm picking my kids to go to walk to school rather than driving, it is making a small difference somehow. So it's just acknowledging, like, how you can play your part and how you can adopt it and make, like, little strategies and, like, you can say strategies to make it work. So I think I'm looking forward, like, in a positive way. It's going to happen only if we all play our part. Like, little means a lot. And it's about taking care of our land, again, I would say. And that's in return going to give us back what we are expecting.
How do we get that message out to the wider community when there's still this almost a reluctance for people to believe that climate change is a big problem? Like, how do we actually get that message out there and help people to understand it? Is the language too complicated?
I think the terminology, like, if I just speak to my family who don't understand the basic terminology that we use in our business side, so it might be a little hard to understand. But if we just bring them and show them the live examples in front of them, they might, like, if I give them example, like, last time I went to Pakistan, I went to one of the cities in Lahore, and it's industrial area, so there was a lot of smog. So I just showed my kids and my cousins who were with me, like, this is what is happening because of the long, big industries and the impact. You are just buying things and not, like, it's because the demand of the people. So they have to provide it. So what is the impact? So if you stop, if you take little step, you're not buying, like, as frequently as you used to be. So it would make an impact. So I think, like, if you show them practically and just by the stories, what has happened in the past and what's coming up, like, if I go to the song I have already advised, like, suggested. So if I tell my children, like, if we used to have a play date outside, but now you're more on screen time, what is the impact? So same, I can relate, I can go to their level and teach them, like, these are the things you're doing now. And in 10 years, 20 years, this would be the impact. So I have to show some example, like, how I can relate it. So I can tell them, like, look, we used to play outside and this is our effect on our body and mind and earth. We know, like, we have different bonding with the nature. You don't know, like, even if I take my kids out, they don't know, like, what affection, I would say, we have with the land, because they're more into the games and all that stuff. So I think, like, it's just building up the relationship and showing them, like, what are the impacts they are doing by certain things.
The other day, I struggle. This is the thing I struggle with, is the pushback from the manufacturers who need to sell products in order to stay existing. And so the other day I saw an ad for a pair of shoes on sale, and I actually didn't need a pair of shoes. I've got enough shoes and they're good shoes, but I clicked on it anyway because I thought, oh, that's a nice looking pair of shoes, with no intention of buying it. Now my entire newsfeed is flooded with shoe sales saying, buy me, buy me, buy me, buy me. And it seems, and I'm a conscious not buyer of things. Yeah. And so how do we actually stop the machine from trying to make us buy stuff?
That I would again relate what Sam said, like, psychological side and the economic side. That's the business economic side. They are trying, like, in the machine, once you click one ad and from your interest or what, they just keep on sending you, pushing you. And psychological side, that if something comes up again and again and again, it reinforcing you to get that. So the strategy I'm using, I am more into clothes, I told you, and my kids. So I said, okay, just put it in your cart, leave it for one night, two night, and three night, and then the passion goes away. Like you think, oh, really? Do I need it? Sometimes it's just, it's on sale. Okay, we are just rush and get it. So it's not the thing. I think we should just step back, think about it. Do we really need it? Why we need it? If we already own it, how can we reuse it? Mm-hmm. Like my middle son, he most of his clothes and shoes from last 1 to 2 years, he's getting it from his elder brother. And now he asked me, can I have the soccer boots? I said, why? And then like the question was why? He said, like, because the last one I got it from the elder brother, but now they're a bit tight. So I said, okay, so that's a genuine reason he can get it. Yes. But if he likes the shape or design, or as you mentioned, the ads that are making the children or even a human being to get attracted to it, so they're just reinforcing it, and we have to stop that actually.
Yes, absolutely.
Summer, I have some questions to end the show, and we've got almost no time, so I'm just going to ask a couple of them. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Putting my kid to the right direction, that I'm proud of at this stage, like as a human being and how they have to act, think, and yeah.
That.
And I'm proud of it. Like, so far it's going good.
Yes, that is a very good success. What's your superpower?
My parents.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
No.
What motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
My family.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Yeah, like as I mentioned, like everyone needs to play their own part. It can be in any context, in raising up your kids, bringing awareness to the people, anything. You just need to play your own part. Just don't think about like what people are going to say. Just hear your mind and your inner conscience and act accordingly. And do your research before that as well.
Sounds like good advice. Mawira.
Simon, I just want to thank you for your beautiful contribution to our shared learning space through the program. It has been a joy to be in the same space as you, with your view that has come from your different cultural upbringing. Your absolute love of your children and your family is just makes my heart happy. And I just want to thank you for the way that you have contributed in the class and the way you've supported your classmates and us as the lecturers as well. Thank you very much for your time today. Thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you, both of you, and especially Mawira. As I told you, I'm just trying to follow you and making you as my mentor, especially with the sustainability perspective. I already gave you an example last week I shared with my parents. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you. We are going out celebrating, but we are going out for the Mutton Birds Dominion Line. Shining like a strip cut from a sheet metal plate, because it's just been raining. Jane reached the point where she knew what it meant before it opened his mouth. He couldn't say the same, or he'd have guessed she was moving south with one of his friends. But it's getting better now. He found it in him to forgive.
rests his head on the windowsill. He watches the city.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. We are broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook, where you can also find Tahu McKenzie, who we had a contribution from today. Today's episode of Coming Up for Air was brought to you by Saima Faisal, who we've been talking with. With Mawira Karatai, I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Matiwa.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.